This week, we take a look at a gleaming book review of the Master's Word, something I found absolutely humbling. Then, we take a look at some modern scientific discoveries in the realm of astronomy. What can the age of stars tell us about a 10 billion year old collision of galaxies? Who were some famous astronomers who also happened to be Freemasons? Finally, we'll wrap it all up with an article from Astrology Magazine back in 1944. In an age where science was actively contradictory to the astrological understanding, how are these seeming juxtaposes explained away? Does the science and astronomy of the day take away anything from astrology as a divine science? All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 496. As usual, first things first, I want to thank our contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners for all of your help. This show has been running close to 10 years since July of 2011. And without these people who contribute, whether monthly or one-time donations, have made it all possible. If you would like to learn more about how you can help the WCY Podcast spread Masonic light all over the world, then head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show at the top, and see how you can help. Now, there are a multitude of benefits for doing so. We do offer some perks, as putting your name on the website, as immortalizing you as somebody who helped this program, sending you a thank you card from me to you, or even getting all of those things plus a lapel pin, a producer's pin, if you will, that would be coming to you. Or if you're a legacy partner and you're somebody who really wants to help out the show in a way that goes far and beyond and allows you to direct an episode annually, then the legacy partner is what you're after. Again, all of that is available on WCYpodcast.com. Click on Support the Show and check it out. My thanks to everybody out there. In the news, I want to let you all know I did go ahead and finish up Ancient and Modern Initiation by Max Handel. A special edition is now available on Amazon and on Kindle and in hardcover. You can also get it direct from me, autographed, if you head on over to the WCYpodcast.com website, click on the shop, and you can check it out there. As well as copies of The Master's Word, which just received rave reviews recently. I'd like to read a review from that in just a little bit, but also How to Charter a Lodge and a multitude of other books and things that you can get, all of which help support the program. Speaking schedules, this is starting to pick up again now that we are all back in session for the most part, or we're limiting contact with others, but still moving into the realm of normal, going back to lodge. So on the 26th of this month, this is May of 2021, I'll be doing a presentation called Esoterics 101, which is, again, is designed to be a beginning look into the deeper mysteries of Freemasonry. It's really ideal for a lodge that needs exposure to the concept of esoteric masonry. We talk about schools of wisdom, hidden symbolism, and it hints at an ultimate revelation within Freemasonry. I'll be doing that for St. John's Lodge number 9 in Seattle, Washington. There's a great lodge up there. And then in June, I'll be doing the Masonic Pub Crawl for Olive Branch Lodge number 114 in Virginia. And a few days later, the Tetragrammaton I'll be doing for Acacia 22 up in Yukon, British Columbia. And then just a couple days after that, I'll be doing Long Been in Darkness on the 19th, which is a look at the traditional candidate preparation. And if you would like to attend any of those, I would urge you to get in contact with those lodges. Again, it's Olive Branch number 114 in Virginia, Acacia 22 at UConn, and St. John's Lodge number 9 in Seattle, Washington. The Zoom information for Long Been in Darkness will be out. You'll have to contact a brother. His email is there. If you'd like to attend, you'll have to email him and he'll get you all the information. So again, for this week, you heard at the top of the program, we've got some great content for you. But first up, I wanted to go ahead and read this review that we got for The Master's Word. And I think this was just an amazing review, sterling, and I can't thank the brother enough for this review. But he says, Seekers of spiritual light and the casual reader alike will find tremendous value in the annotated edition of The Master's Word, a short treatise on the Word, the Light, and the Self, which is compiled, annotated, and edited by Robert H. Johnson and John T. Ruark. The original publication, written in 1913 by George Winslow Plumer, opens the mind to unique perspectives of human existence and the reason for simply being. In doing so, Plumer provides insight that nearly forces the reader to consider the then-current worldview experience into a more historical, objective light that transcends all specific religions by examining the most significant concepts of life and what it means to live. Over time, however, some of the language and ideas contained therein have become fallacious or lost on the contemporary audience, while others are still as true now as they were then. Hence the value of this 2021 edition by Johnson and Ruark. There are two significant additions that lend well to the success of the new edition: the footnotes throughout the treatise and the epilogue. The former is used, as necessary, to add depth and understanding to words, concepts, and phrases throughout Plumer's early Opus Magnum. These footnotes are used for terrific effect. The reviewer would suggest that the Master's Word is sought out by a smaller, more specific audience than is on a perpetual pilgrimage for more spiritual light. However, Johnson and Ruark's insight throughout cuts through the mental grind of reconciling Plumer's concepts with modern perspective. They offer the meaning and definition behind Plumer's assertions, as well as the contemporary philosophies that are widely accepted today. This goes a long way in bridging over a century's worth of changes in worldview concepts that challenge the status quo of religious thought. In doing so, they opened this current work to a whole new audience, not only to those specifically in pursuit of spiritual light that Plumer's concepts are appealing to, but perhaps the casual reader, who is simply just trying to expand their own knowledge foundation. The second edition that this reviewer finds particularly value in is the epilogue. This important element is instrumental because it reads more like a comprehensive review of Plumer's work itself, as well as providing biographical information that is relevant to place the original work in its proper context. This may not be necessary for the astute student of Rosicrucianism, but the general reader almost needs this information to bring clarity to all of the concepts Plumer introduces. That is the beauty and appeal of this new edited version, and why it will reach a larger audience that may not necessarily be seeking anything specific, but a nice informative read that will expand their own knowledge and wisdom. Johnson and Ruark indeed found success and appeal in their edited version of The Master's Word, a short treatise on the Word, the Light, and the Self. They successfully interjected informative insight throughout Plumer's work and brought it all together with a pleasant summation in the epilogue. Readers will surely not want to miss the opportunity to seek light in this important work. Mike Johnson, Deputy Grand Master, Kansas. What an incredible, amazing review. I could not be more humbled by this. I know John feels the same way. We talked about it over the last week, and we were both just excited. So, hey, shameless plug again. If you were on the fence before, I hope that review pushes you over the edge to go ahead and pick up a copy of the book. Next up is some new research that came out on May 17, 2021, out of Ohio State University. Within Freemasonry, we study the seven liberal arts and sciences, which are grammar, rhetoric, logic, arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. Now, the sciences are exactly that. These sciences are not necessarily things we discover, but rather they're inventions of ways of looking at the natural phenomena and how we break them down for our conscious minds to understand and to see how these things fit together. We have to conceptualize them in this kind of way. And of course, mathematics is one of the ways that we do this. But what about things like astronomy? Well, there was some recent discoveries, as I mentioned, revealed in Ohio State University, and we're going to put the link back to the original journal reference, but I thought this added some really cool weight to the idea of studying astronomy and maybe even astrology, which is somewhat the theme for this episode. New evidence of how and when the Milky Way came together. Aging individual stars helped date an early merger event. Using relatively new methods in astronomy, the researchers were able to identify the most precise ages currently possible for a sample of about 100 red giant stars in the galaxy. With this and other data, the researchers were able to show what was happening when the Milky Way merged with an orbiting satellite galaxy known as Gaia Enceladus about 10 billion years ago. Their results were published today, May 17, 2021, in the journal Nature Astronomy. Quote, "Our evidence suggests that when the merger occurred, the Milky Way had already formed a larger population of its own stars," end quote, said Fiorenzo Vincenzo, co-author of the study and a fellow in the Ohio State University Center for Cosmology and Astroparticle Physics. Many of the quote-unquote homemade stars ended up in the thick disk in the middle of the galaxy, while most that were captured from Gaia and Enceladus are in the outer halo of the galaxy. Quote, "The merging event with Gaia and Enceladus is thought to be one of the most important in the Milky Way's history, shaping how we observe it today," end quote, said Josefina Montalban with the School of Physics and Astronomy at the University of Birmingham in the UK, who led the project. By calculating the age of the stars, the researchers were able to determine, for the first time, that the stars captured from Gaia and Enceladus have familiar or slightly younger ages compared to the majority of stars that were born inside the Milky Way. "A violent merger between two galaxies can't help but shake things up," Vincenzo said. Results showed that the merger changed the orbits of the stars already in the galaxy, making them more eccentric. Vincenzo compared the stars' movement to a dance. When the stars from the former Gaia and Enceladus move differently than those born within the Milky Way. "The stars even dress differently," Vincenzo said, "with stars from outside showing different chemical compositions from those born inside the Milky Way." The researchers used several different approaches and data sources to conduct the study. One way the researchers were able to get such precise ages of the stars was through the use of astroseismology, a relatively new field that probes the internal structure of stars. Astroseismologists study oscillations in stars, which are sound waves that ripple through their interiors, said Matthew Berard, a postdoctoral research associate in Ohio State's Department of Astronomy. Quote, "That allows us to get very precise ages of the stars, which are important in determining the chronology of when events happened in the early Milky Way," end quote, Berard said. The study also used a spectroscopic survey called APOGEE, A-P-O-G-E-E, which provides the chemical composition of stars, another aid in determining their ages. "We have shown the great potential of astroseismology in combination with spectroscopy to age-date individual stars," Montalban said. This study is just the first step, according to the researchers. "We now intend to apply this approach to a large sample of stars, and to include even more subtle features of the frequency spectra," Vincenzo said. "This will eventually lead to a much sharper view of the Milky Way's assembly, history, and evolution, creating a timeline of how our galaxy developed. The work is the result of the Collaborative Astrochronometry Project funded by the European Research Council. Materials provided Ohio State University, originally written by Jeff Grabmeier." Again, I'd like to provide the link back to this journal entry as well, which is found in Science Daily. I'll post the link in the show notes. But this also got me thinking about the concept of astronomy, and initially its early relation to astrology, which at some point were one and the same, apparently, and make a split. Now, if you ask modern-day astrologers what they think of the split, they will tell you that, yes, they split, and that it's unfortunate that people view astronomy as legitimate and as astrology as illegitimate. Perhaps we'll have an episode on that in the future. But I was wondering, and I went straight to a website where I said, you know, here's what I want to know. I want to know who some famous Freemasons who were astronomers. So there's this wiki page out there that has all these famous Freemasons listed, and I searched for the term astronomer. Over all of the names, I found just three. Now, undoubtedly, there must be more. The three that I found that came up were George Bishop, who is an astronomer. He was born in 1785 in Leicester, and he passed away in 1861. He is a noted English astronomer of the 19th century. What did he do in astronomy? Well, in 1836, he was able to realize a long-held intention by erecting an astronomical observatory near his residence, which at that point was South Villa of Regent's Park. He spared no expense in order to ensure that it would be of practical use. He said, "I am determined that this observatory shall do something. Period. A testimonial was awarded to Bishop by the Royal Astronomical Society in 1848, quote, for the foundation of an observatory leading to various astronomical discoveries, end quote. He also acted as a secretary to the society from 1833 to 39, and as the treasurer from 1840 to 1857. This kind of sounds like a Masonic lodge. We're staying in these secretary and treasurer positions a little too long. And anyway, he's chosen to be as the president in two successive years, 1857 and 1858, although the state of his health rendered him unable to take the chair. He was actually elected to a fellow of the Royal Society on the 9th of June, 1848, and was also a fellow of the Royal Society of Arts, and sat for some years on the Council of University College. Well, after a long period of physical illness, he retains his faculties in a mental capacity, but he eventually dies on the 14th of June, 1861, at 76 years of age. And again, that's George Bishop. Another one that you'll find is James Bradley. James Bradley, 1692 to 1762, was an English astronomer and a priest who served as the third Astronomer Royal from 1742. He's best known for two fundamental discoveries in astronomy. What's known as the aberration of light, which is a phenomenon which produces an apparent motion of celestial objects about their true positions, which is dependent on the velocity of the observer. It causes objects to appear to be displaced toward the direction of motion of the observer compared to when the observer is stationary. So basically, where it is in relation to where it seems like it is, if you're moving or not moving. But he also assisted in the discovery of something called nutations of Earth's axis, which is a phenomenon which causes the orientation of the axis, right, of our axis of rotation or spinning to vary over time. So how we have this wobble. This is somewhat what we would consider astronomical nutation. These discoveries were called the most brilliant and useful of the century by Jean-Baptiste Joseph Delambre, historian of astronomy, mathematical astronomer, and director of the Paris Observatory in his History of Astronomy in the 18th century. Because, quote, it is to these two discoveries by Bradley that we owe the exactness of modern astronomy. This double service assures to their discoverer the most distinguished place after Hipparchus and Kepler, above the greatest astronomers of all ages and countries. So pretty high praise for a dude born way back in the 17th century. And then the third that I found was a man named Milan Rostislav Stefanik. Now, he is born in July of 1880, passes away in 1919. He was a Slavic politician, diplomat, aviator, a Freemason, and astronomer. During World War I, he serves at the same time as the general in the French army and as a minister of the war of Czechoslovakia, as one of the leading members of the Czechoslovak National Council, which was the resistance government. He contributed decisively to the cause of Czechoslovakian sovereignty, since the status of Czech and Slavic populated territories was one of those in question until shortly before the disintegration of the Austro-Hungarian Empire in 1918. His personal motto was, quote-unquote, to believe, to love, to work. In 1904, he goes to Paris to find a job in astronomy with a recommendation from a Czech professor who is known in Paris. Initially, he has no money and no command of French, so he speaks no French. But he was nevertheless able to obtain a job at a famous Paris Moudon Observatory after its director, Pierre Janssen, one of the co-founders of astrophysics, saw Stefanik's talent. The observatory was the most important center for astronomy at the time, so he gained massive prestige from his job. He observed the Moon and Mars. Then he takes part in the official French expedition to observe and record a full eclipse of the Sun in Alcasombra in Spain. He thus established his own reputation in French scientific society. He worked with Gaston Millichau, a member of the Académie Française, which made some of its members read his work. His studies and the results of his observations were published in reports to the Academy, and he received several awards from them. Later, he's invited to an international astronomer conference in Oxford on solar research, and between 1906 and 1908, he was the co-director of the Mont Blanc Observatories Company. In 1907, he actually receives the Prix Jules Janssen, the highest award for the Société Astronomique de France, the French Astronomical Society. His death is marked by tragedy. He actually goes to return home to see his family, and he wants to fly from one area of Italy and to use an Italian military plane, what was called a Caproni CA-3. On the 4th of May in 1919, at around 11 o'clock, his plane tried to land near Bratislava, a military conflict area between the First Republic of Czechoslovakia and the Hungarian Soviet Republic. But he crashed near Ivanka Pri Donaji, and he dies along with the rest of the crew, which were two Italian pilots, Colonel Giotto Mancinelli Scotti and Sergeant Umberto Merlino, as well as the mechanic and radio telegrapher Gabriel Agiusto. The reason for the crash is disputed. The official, albeit what's called the false explanation, was that the airplane crashed because of bad weather, but it was really sunny with only a mild wind. However, the official thorough investigation was not performed for more than 7 years. So there are some notable contributors to astronomy who were notable Freemasons. Now, none of these guys have these, you know, epic Freemason records, you know, worshipful master installed here, seven lodges, and, you know, was a Scottish Rite member, or all these things that we're used to today. These were generally guys who became Freemasons and then went on to do amazing and great things, which is awesome. So I hope you find some value in covering a little bit of what we call one of the seven liberal arts and sciences. So our first question for the Craftsman Plus out there is, given the constant discoveries in astronomy that we find today, what is something that you've often thought about in terms of astronomy or space that you feel we will discover either exists or doesn't exist within your lifetime? Now, you can take that anywhere you want to go. You could talk about aliens, you could talk about exoplanets, you could talk about going to Mars or back to the moon. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Now, keeping up with the similar theme of astronomy and astrology, I wanted to bring you this article that was published in Astrology Magazine from December of 1944, and it's called Causes or Symbols by John Cleary Baker, FFBA. There is no sight more grim and grisly than that of an average student of astrology trying to be scientific. He or she will talk vaguely of rays, influences, vibrations, and the like, in happy ignorance of the fact that science has made considerable strides in the last 50 years. The mechanical theories of the universe on which our student is fain to construct a rationale of the divine sciences are as out of date as the crinolines to the era of which they properly belong. Scientists no longer imagine that the planets swing around the sun under the impulse of a mysterious force of gravity. They do not believe that light travels through space via luminiferous ether. What Victorian physics regarded as action at a distance is now looked upon as a peculiar kind of crumpling of an indefinable something called the space-time continuum. I have no exaggerated respect for scientific hypotheses, for the hypotheses of today may be the fallacies of the morrow. Still, there would seem to be no doubt that Sir James Jeans and others are right in abandoning a materialistic conception of the cosmos for an idealist one. We see in the universe not a great machine, but the workings of a great mind. This trend in scientific and philosophical views is wholly favorable to astrology. There is no evidence that modern astrology represents the mangled fragments of some primitive revelation. On the contrary, as compared with our highly technical methods and theories, the astrology of the Chaldeans would appear to have been a relatively crude affair. No doubt it worked well enough in the simpler society of those days, but with the ever-increasing complication of human affairs, we may reasonably suppose that astrological technique has become correspondingly more elaborate. This has been the case with every other art and science. Why not with astrology also? The early star seers must have observed certain basic facts, which set them theorizing along astrological lines. They must have observed that there is a 12-fold major and a 36-fold minor diurnal cycle in the types of human character generated. It was a short step to commemorating these 48 types by framing 12 zodiacal and 36 extra-zodiacal constellations of stars. These watchers of man and nature must also have noted a periodicity in the ebb and flow of human and national fortunes, and correlated these mutations with the cycles of the planets. So astrology was born. Arbitrary and empirical though the allocations of constellations, lunar mansions, and planets to the rulership of human types and affairs may have been, it was quite satisfactory in practice because it symbolized the cyclic character of the laws of nature, or, if we prefer to put it so, of the thinking of cosmic mind. In later centuries, with the growing perfection of mathematical and instrumental aids, it was found more satisfactory to refer the sequence of types formally symbolized by the constellation to the sun's path or ecliptic, beginning at the vernal equinox. So we have the signs, decanates, and lunar asterisms as employed by all of us in our work today. The constellations remain an alternative set of perfectly valid and useful symbols. Indeed, they are still utilized in the theory of the coming of Aquarian Age, marked by the passage of the vernal equinox into the stars of Aquarius. This brings us to the main thesis of my article. It is absurd to regard the heavenly bodies as the cause of the events they foreshadow in their motions. How can the retrogradation of a mathematical point without substance or dimensions into the midst of a group of stars, which have absolutely no connection with each other, save a purely accidental one as viewed from Earth, influence humanity so as to bring to birth a new age? How can Saturn, a great globe of gas, exercise a causal relation with the density of innumerable human beings? How can a space of 30 mathematical degrees beyond the vernal equinox affect the destinies of England and Germany? No, I am not afraid our students will have to abandon the notion of mysterious rays dashing about through space and impinging on the minds of men, much as a boxer's fist contacts the jaw of his opponent. The idea is bad science, and contrary to all reason and probability, and its propagation can only bring astrology into contempt with reasoning men. The heavenly bodies are symbols, not causes of events, man-made symbols, if you will, but not the less valuable for that. The most important thing about astrology, after all, is that it works, and all lesser considerations hinge upon that fundamental fact. The universe is a dream shared by all of us who have been thrust by the hand of karma into the sphere of the world, meditation of cosmic mind. In the intervals between lives, when we wave out of our own minds our version of the dream world of the astral, we may, if we be sufficiently conscious of our condition, glean some idea of the illusionary character of the external cosmos. Planets and stars have no more objective reality apart from the cosmic mind than the symbols of the mathematician. In an idealist view of the universe lies hidden the grandeur and glory of astrology. When we delineate a horoscope, we are not assessing influences like a scientist investigating chemical combinations. We are unveiling the wonder of the divine as manifested in the life of a fellow being. Astrology is the divine science indeed, and we are the unworthy priests of a traditional wisdom which has endured since the dim dawn of mankind on earth and will endure as long as humanity. Well, there you have that one. Quite an interesting article relating to the juxtapose of what astrology was seemingly teaching at this point and the rapid expansion of knowledge acquired by astronomy, or the scientific explanation of the heavenly bodies. But within this, he decries some of the ideas about divination or prediction of the future, but then continues to say how it is a divine science and is relative and that it works. So maybe the mystery here is that it works, but we don't know why it works. Our second question for our Craftsman Plus this week relates to, of course, astrology. And the question is, how many of you either practice astrology, have gotten an astrological reading, a natal chart or something along these lines, and also, who out there doesn't believe in astrology? And remember, to keep your answers respectful, you know, nobody's going to be calling each other idiots, I hope. But I am curious to the people who say it is legitimate and perhaps illegitimate, and what your thoughts are on it if you've had a reading done, either way. I would love to hear your thoughts on that as well. I'll go ahead and I'll chime in eventually in that thread also, and I really look forward to reading all of your thoughts. That's it for this week. I want to thank you all for coming with us. As usual, thanks to our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners, we cannot do this program without you. If you want to learn more about how you can become a supporter of this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show. Additionally, if the book, The Master's Word, or the brand new book, Ancient and Modern Initiation, the book we read over 12 or 13 episodes, interests you, and having the short biography as well as an epilogue within it, head on over there as well and pick up your copy, either autographed, or you can go to Amazon and get it on Kindle. You can have a two-day ship straight from Amazon in a paperback, or same for hardcover editions. But I hope you guys enjoy. And again, that's it for this week. So until next week, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.